The first thing I wanted to say was congratulations on this recording, The Falling of the Pine. It's really impressive. It's beautiful to look at and to listen to. I can tell it must have been a great labor of love for you.
It was, yeah. Thanks. Thank you so much, Kara, for saying that. Yeah, a lot of work went into it. A lot of work went into its predecessor, which was called Minnesota Lumberjack Songs. And that was a project that I kind of thought about for a few years and then finally put together. That came out in 2011. And that was more of a solo venture. This one's a duo. And ever since Minnesota Lumberjack Songs came out, the first CD, I've been working with Randy, and it's been a lot more fun to do it as a duo than it was fun to do it by myself, but it's been great to work with Randy. He's an amazing musician, and to bounce ideas off him on the musical creative side of things has been just invaluable. Yeah. So there's the whole musical side to it. And then there's the whole research side. There's so much to talk about because I've put so much work into both.
And that's where I wanted to go next, is where do you have to look these days if you find yourself interested in the culture and traditions of these working men of the North who are chopping lumber and sending it around the world?
Well, lucky for us, there were some folk song collectors that came through the upper Midwest, the Great Lakes, and the lumbering regions, which basically stretched from New Brunswick and Maine westward across the Great Lakes. And then the pine trees kind of end at Minnesota, as most people would know, and the prairies begin. So all through the 1800s, men were bouncing around from job to job across that region. And the singing went on at night in lumber camps, and it also went on board Great Lakes ships. So when folk song collectors got started kind of becoming interested in folk song in rural America in the early 1900s, a lot of the singers that were part of this woods tradition, this Great Lakes and lumber camp tradition, a lot of them were old, and the tradition had kind of died down a lot by then. So you have to look at folk song collections that were made fairly early in the 1900s. So like the 1920s and 1930s are the best, most kind of rich collections. And there were some great ones made.
That's the early days of recording technology.
Right. So the really special sources for myself and Randy are the actual audio recordings. And those are fairly tricky to find, but they are out there. And I can tell you an amazing story about finding one of those. But the first stop for most people is just transcriptions of the way people sang it. And then the song lyrics are the easiest thing to find. And those you could even just go online and look up on Mudcat or one of these online song databases. But there are great books. In Michigan, there was a series of books put out by a guy named E.C. Beck. There's also a book of songs collected in the southern part of Michigan called Ballads of Southern Michigan, I think made by Gardner and Chickering in the 1930s.
I've actually been to the collection in Ann Arbor where Ivan Walton's recordings are held.
Right, and Ivan Walton is another one. And that for some reason, I didn't discover his stuff until more recently. And the wonderful thing about Walton's collecting is he did make a lot of audio recordings. So those are just fantastic. And on the new CD, we have one song, The Jails of Buffalo, that I learned from a CD that accompanies a book you can get called Windjammers. It was put out. It's a bunch of songs collected by Ivan Walton around Michigan. And he kind of focused on singers that sang on Great Lakes ships, but they had a very similar repertoire to what was sung in the lumber camps, because of course a lot of men did both jobs. The lumber work was something you did in the winter, and then so some people would work in camps in the winter and then on boats in the summer, and they would sing the same songs in both settings.
One of the tune sets on the CD features a tune called The Gravel Walks, and that is still played today in Irish sessions. But to listen to Patrick Bonner's version, he had a completely different take on it.
Yeah, and if you go to the archival recordings of Patrick Bonner, and for those that don't know, Patrick Bonner was an amazing fiddle player who lived on Beaver Island, and Beaver Island was an especially rich area for song and for fiddle playing, up a little bit later than other areas. Of course, parts of Michigan that would have become more urbanized by the early 1900s, it was kind of urbanization and recorded music and the radio and just, you know, the aftermath of the Industrial Revolution that killed a lot of folk song tradition. But in Beaver Island, they were isolated enough that it kept going there. And this fiddle player, Patrick Bonner, had a very unique style of playing the fiddle. He was also a great singer and had a lot of fascinating songs as well.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk about the character and purpose of this music. And in order to, when I think about it, I try to put myself in a lumber camp, you know, having exhausted myself with physical labor all day, and there's a nice warm fire and finally a little time to enjoy. And what kind of music comes out of that?
Right. In a lot of ways, like I was saying, urbanization and connection to town or to city really wasn't good for traditional singing. In contrast, being in a lumber camp for the entire winter, and these guys in the early days, earlier in the 1800s, they didn't leave all winter. They were not only cooped up in this little bunk at night, but they were literally at the camp for the entire winter, really, until the snow melted. So you were isolated. You needed to entertain yourself. You needed to entertain your peers. As everyone knows, it gets dark early, especially up north. If you're in the UP or something, and the sun was setting at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, you have to stop work at that point. So they would go back to the bunks and hang up their smelly, woolly, long underwear that they probably only washed once a month, if they were lucky, and they had some time to kill before they went to bed. And of course, they got up very early, so they went to bed kind of early, but still there was some time there. And so anyone that knew how to sing songs, and anyone that knew how to sing songs well, especially, was extremely valuable. And there are amazing stories about that. There's a story about a singer in Wisconsin who had lost an arm and a leg in a farming accident and was actually blind, but he was still on the payroll of some lumber camps because he could. He was a great singer. So it was this environment where like homegrown entertainment was very valuable, and that just gave these old songs wings. So these old songs that guys carried over with them from Europe, especially from Ireland, they lived on. And then because it was such a vibrant singing culture, they started making up new songs about their life up north too. So
there are genres here that include quite sad songs about longing and missing someone, but there's comedy songs. I love this baseball song you have here.
Yeah.
And so it kind of covers the full gamut of emotions, you know, because there are moments for each song, you know, just like in conversation, you can go from joking to something serious. The same thing happens with songs.
Sure, and I think if people are familiar at all with the Irish tradition and the idea of just this older idea of entertaining everybody at a party by kind of offering your party piece, by having your song that you sing or your story that you tell, or maybe somebody takes out a fiddle and there's a dance, but there's this sense in the lumber camps, just like there was in the house dances of Ireland, that for a well-balanced evening, you know, you have maybe some dance music, some dancing. You also have some sad songs. You probably have some lighthearted songs. Maybe there are some very local songs that somebody maybe has been all day working in the fields, in the case of Ireland, or maybe in the case of the lumber woods, somebody's out working in the woods all day, and they're thinking of some way to make up a funny little song, kind of making fun of their buddies. So you get a lot of songs that are just naming the people in the camp and, like, making fun of the cook for, you know, making too much cooking beans for too many meals. Or, you know, so there are lighthearted songs like that. The other thing is Irish material, especially the Irish really dominated popular music all through the 1800s, like Tin Pan Alley and what we think of as vaudeville music or music hall songs, and a lot of those were very funny, and so those made their way into lumber camps too. And that's the story behind the baseball song that's on the album. It's an old Irish music hall song.
When baseball was a craze in some town in Minnesota.
Yeah, it was. That particular song comes from the repertoire of a singer named Mike Dean, who I've done a lot of research on for the last 5 years. I find him to be totally fascinating, and I'm working on a book about him. But he was an Irish-American who actually came through Michigan and worked in the Manistee area for a while, and then came to Minnesota and lived in Hinckley, where, just like in a lot of small towns in the late 1800s, there was baseball fever all summer long. These little towns all had their little teams, and they'd go play the neighboring team. So that's probably what he had in mind when he sang that song, though it actually came from a songwriter in New York.
They made me carry all the bats. I thought they'd set me crazy. They stuck me out in center field. I paralyzed them all. I stuck up my hand to catch a fly. Holy murder, it struck me in the eye, and they left me out by the fence to die the day I played baseball.
Tell me about some of the turns of language that you find appealing or maybe unusual. I really like the locality that you can hear songs about places I've been, not just back in Ireland, but, you know, they mention Buffalo, and they mention different rivers and towns and things like that that kind of make me realize this is real life music too.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And for me growing up, I mean, I grew up in northern Minnesota in Bemidji, which is an old lumbering town, and I became obsessed with Irish music as a teenager and have spent all this time in Ireland and a lot of time obsessing over Irish tunes. And of course, they're all named after little towns and little events and sometimes big events or big towns, but they're about places in Ireland. And so going to Ireland, you know, it's hardly any kind of trip I could go on over there without running into tune names everywhere. You know, I'm on the road to Listún Varna, or I'm, you know, taking a trip to Athlone to go to the gas station. You know, the tune names are always popping up, and that was always so exciting to me when I would go to Ireland. And so then to get into this music, which amazingly has a lot of connections to Irish music in terms of style, but then has place names in the Midwest, so places I've been before, you know, like to have Hinckley mentioned in a song, which is a town that I would drive through anytime I drive from the Twin Cities to Duluth. Or we're learning some songs, especially for our tour in Michigan, that mention Saginaw or mention the Rifle River or the Tibawasi, other rivers around Michigan. And I think that's really cool and powerful, and it kind of drives home this idea of do-it-yourself music, right? Because if you do it yourself, you can throw in your local names and things like that, you know?
Exactly. You're not just parroting something you learned. You add what you know to the music.
Right. And there are amazing examples. There's a song that we'll do that's on the first CD. It's called Katahdin, and it's a messed up pronunciation of the word Katahdin, which is a mountain in Maine. And that song is almost verse for verse a remake of a song from the northern part of Ireland about a guy going to get a job in Scotland. And it just got reworked, and all the place names got changed, and the job got changed from itinerant farming to being a lumberjack. And it's amazing. You know, people took old songs and made them their own.
This CD, The Falling of the Pine and Minnesota Lumberjack Songs, will be available at your concert on October 20th in Richland, I'm assuming.
Yes, for sure.
What is the live experience going to be like?
Well, Randy and I, when we perform live, we really work hard to strike a balance between, like I was saying, between the history side of things and all the research that I've done with also just making really great music. Both of us have over a decade experience playing in Irish bands, and I've been there to Richland playing with Bua and also with Korua. So we try to draw on all that experience and our love of Irish song arranging. We both love the work that Paul Brady and Andy Irvin did on those early recordings, and Planxty and Dervish and all these groups that use interweaving bouzoukis and guitars. So hopefully, if you come to the show, you'll appreciate just how nice the music is, and we'd really do our best to highlight how beautiful these melodies are, how beautiful some of the poetry is, and also how fun some of the songs are too. So we try to bring all that out with the way we play, and then we try to also work in the research and the historical aspects by showing some historical photos when we can, if we can get a hold of a projector, which I think we should be able to. So there are historical photos that we show, and I tell stories from my research that contextualize the songs. But it's, you know, a lot of, just like any concert, it's mostly about the music.
You know what I find almost touching, moving, is that you are honoring people who never had two pennies to put together. These are not songs about the love lives of earls and queens and things like that. This is people who've truly struggled.
Yeah, it's true, you know, and it's been an interesting, journey navigating the way people feel about lumberjacks. I think the word lumberjack has this really kind of silly connotation for whatever reason. I don't know if it's Monty Python to blame or Walt Disney, but or maybe just Paul Bunyan. But everybody, it kind of has this folk humor persona in people's minds. It's either that, or they think about logging, and they think about the devastation of clear cutting and how hard it was on the environment to have this industry sort of tear its way through our beautiful natural resources. But really what the songs are about is that they're songs of working men, like you say. You know, they're like miner songs or sailor songs, you know, farmer songs. There's songs about life kind of in the trenches, working really hard. And these guys, at the time, there was this great optimism in the United States. There was a big push westward. People were building houses, and there was an extreme explosion of population. So, you know, progress was happening. There were homes that needed to be built. Lumber was at a premium. And these were kind of the grunts that were out there making it happen, you know? And at the same time, a lot of them were immigrants who had found a better life and better opportunities in the woods than they would have had back in Europe. You know, and again, we focus a lot on the Irish guys, of which there were many. And, you know, for a lot of them, they were delighted to be out of the potato famine or whatever situation they left behind there.
And working 14-hour days in the woods.
Yeah, but, you know, that's interesting, too, because I think it was a little bit better than what you would have experienced if you were a miner or even a railroad worker. Part of it, I think, just because the sun would go down and you had to stop working. And it's as much of hard work it was, and as much as some of the songs complain about the conditions, there's also this sense of, it's almost like going to hunting camp for guys these days. I'm sure Michigan's the same as Minnesota. There's this whole culture of, you know, getting away from it all, getting away from women, hiding in the woods with a bunch of guys and not cleaning yourself for a while. That comes through in the songs, too. There's almost kind of like a giddy sort of manly joy in some of the songs.
On the album cover, we see you and Randy seated, and you've got your guitar, and he has his mandolin. But between you is my favorite sound on the record. It's a curious little box that I wish you'd explain for me.
Right. So I said that we're both fans of the work that Andy Irvin and Paul Brady did in the Irish tradition back in the 70s, and they did a lot of song arranging where they played around with drones, because of course the Irish bagpipes, Dylan pipes, have a drone, and a lot of these old melodies work really well with a drone. So what they used on some of their stuff was a harmonium, or they also used another instrument called the hurdy-gurdy. But the harmonium is it's basically like a travel version of the pump organ, and it folds down into a suitcase, and then it kind of folds up, and instead of pumping it with your feet like you would a pump organ, you have to pump it with one of your hands, which only leaves one hand to play it. But then what they did to make up for that is they put drones on it, so you can pull these stops and you get drones. Anyhow, it's the harmonium has its own interesting history. It's been sort of adopted into Indian music, East Indian music, probably because it came there with British missionaries. But we got a hold of one, and what we do is we put it between us when we play, and then it's kind of ridiculous, but I pump it with my knee, and we set it up with the drones, so that way we can get a drone going. It's kind of like the ghost third member of the band, you know?
Well, it's doing a great job. I love it.
It works really well, and sometimes Randy reaches over and actually plays chords on it as well. So it's a part of a lot of the songs we do.
Well, where did you find this travel harmonium?
Believe it or not, we got it on Craigslist. There's a pretty active East Indian music community here in the Twin Cities. And I went on Craigslist, and on a lark one day I typed in harmonium, and to my surprise there was one available, and it ended up being a fairly decent one. So,
well, Brian, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I commend you for this project, and I'm glad you're bringing it to the Richland Community Hall on Sunday, October 20th at 3 o'clock. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Kara.